Good morning. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tobin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. In the last 2 months, 7 state prison inmates have died while in custody, and 31 have died this year. And despite a new law that was enacted in June requiring autopsies of all inmates who die in Nevada State Corrections custody, there have been several delays in determining the cause of death of some of the inmates. Joining me today is Anna Lay, a cops reporter who's written a story about in the Las Vegas Sun about the recent deaths in Nevada State prisons. Thanks for joining us, Anna.
Thank you for having me.
So first, what is this new law that the Nevada State Legislature passed this year? What did it require?
Well, it passed June 2nd, and essentially it requires the Department of Corrections to request an autopsy for any inmate who dies under their care. In the past, the department essentially would have coroners contracted by the department to kind of decide what to do and whether an autopsy was necessary, depending on the circumstances of the death, whether it looked like there was foul play involved or, you know, if it didn't seem to be a natural death. But this new law essentially makes it mandatory for anyone who dies under their care to get an autopsy.
And how does Nevada compare to other states in terms of the number of inmates it has and how many die in custody each year?
It ranks 14th in terms of deaths. Compared to other states, the highest, I believe, was Mississippi. And in essence, it's not all the way up there, but it's also not at the bottom of the list.
Out of 50 states, being 14th probably isn't the greatest, right?
Yeah.
And now you looked specifically into one of these cases, and you did a sort of a whole story of there. It was the case of Richard First, who died October 5th at the Northern Nevada Correctional Center. And then tell us about his story. What happened with him?
Okay, Richard passed away October 5th, and his family was initially told that he had liver complications. He had hepatitis C. His family is very open with me, and they said that he had probably contracted the disease when he was using a dirty needle. He had a drug addiction. The family was told when he died that he had undergone surgery 2 weeks before he died, which they were never told about, which essentially goes against their own rules and regulations. So they were never told about this surgery, and then he passed away. And the family was never given a definitive cause or manner of death. The body was simply sort of transferred to a funeral home where he was to be cremated, but the family never submitted the paperwork for the cremation. So his body has been essentially in a cold chamber since he died in October, and it's still there. His family's attorneys right now are trying to figure out how to fund a private autopsy, and they plan to go through his medical records to essentially kind of know what to look for when the autopsy is performed.
He obviously died after this new law went into effect, right? Why was he transferred and scheduled for cremation when, I mean, wouldn't he be under the requirement for an autopsy?
We don't know. The Department of Corrections is not commenting. They have refused to talk about any of the cases. They say that the Attorney General's office has told them not to talk about anything specifically dealing with their inmate deaths. Because the Attorney General's office says that that's because of privacy concerns, that they can't release medical histories for anyone. And I presume they mean that includes the results of any autopsies that they perform. But they still haven't been very clear about whether the 4 men who died in October at the Northern Nevada Correctional Center even had autopsies.
I see. So there's other cases where we're not even sure if they were following the rules,
right,
with the previous laws. So is the state looking? What are state agencies doing? Attorney General? I mean, what's going on with this?
The governor's office says that the Attorney General's office and Department of Corrections is investigating the deaths, that they weren't specific as to what exactly that investigation entailed.
Mm-hmm.
And neither department has addressed inquiries about this this new law and whether it's being implemented correctly within the department.
And in terms of this new law, is that something that's common in the other states and across the country? Are we catching up, or are we ahead of the game, or what's typical?
We're not ahead of the game. We're essentially just doing what other states already do. Obviously, not every other state, but a lot of other states already do this. It's just more transparent for them. It rids them of a lot of liability concerns in mm-hmm. a lot of cases. So we're really just kind of more in line with what other states are already doing.
And now the state chapter of the ACLU, I think you mentioned in your story, right? Are they investigating, or have they made some sort of request of Department of Corrections?
They are. They have been following this since October, and they requested information from the Department of Corrections in early November and never heard back. So they're also growing a little frustrated with just sort of a lack of communication from the department. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to find out, in essence, what happened in these cases.
And in any of the cases that we're talking, is there any particular cases where foul play is suspected, or where the details are particularly, sort of confusing?
None of the cases, according to the department, involve foul play, except for one. So it's very possible that most of these deaths were natural. Mm-hmm. But, in most of them, we just don't know.
And then the family also was, for Richard First, I believe you said, they were originally thought he died in an infirmary, but he died in his cell, right?
Right.
So was there just mix up in information that was put out when he first died, or
it's not really clear why the family was told that. But yes, initially his mother was told that after he underwent the surgery, he had some kind of complication and that he passed away in the infirmary. But later, through the funeral home, the family found out that he actually died inside of his cell, and he was found dead. He wasn't, under the care of a doctor or anything. At least that's what it sounds like.
Right. And now, First, then, like you said, his family is trying to get their own autopsy done. I mean, has the Department of Corrections said anything about how that they will eventually perform an autopsy, under the rule, basically the laws that they're under, that they do plan on doing an autopsy at this point?
At this point, the body is not under their, they don't have the body. So they really wouldn't even be able to, I think, even if they wanted, unless they were to go to the funeral home and take the body back,
right,
or, request it, that it be done there, which I'm not sure that funeral home is equipped to do. So right now, the body remains in a cold chamber, and the family is, they seem pretty willing to fund their own autopsy, which their attorneys tell me will cost them about $4,000 to $6,000.
Right. And obviously you said that they've expressed privacy concerns in terms of talking to the media and disclosing information. But I mean, what is the family? You've spoken with the family, Mr. First's mother, correct? And so is she getting more information? I mean, are they being forthcoming with her? Have they had a hard time speaking with Department of Corrections and the officials?
They had a hard time initially. Getting the medical records took a couple of weeks. The Attorney General's office actually handled that portion of the request for information from the family. And the Attorney General's office says that it took so long because they had to verify that the next of kin had given authorization mm-hmm. to the attorneys. But they've expressed frustration with the amount of time that it's taken to just get through the process. I mean, he died October 5th. That's more than 2 months now.
And have you spoken with any, the politicians that actually, lobbied and passed this law? I mean, what are they, with this sort of rash of deaths over the last couple of months and it doesn't seem like autopsies are being done in all cases. I mean, has anybody spoken out and be like, hey, why isn't this law being enforced in terms of the politicians you spoke to or officials?
Yeah, they seem puzzled more than anything. It doesn't really make sense. And since the department's not speaking, there's really no way of knowing why that didn't happen.
Right.
At least that's what it appears. It appears that autopsies were not requested for at least four of these men.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this and if there's any investigations going forward. And hopefully the Richard First family will be able to get the answers they're looking for. But thanks. We've been speaking with Anna Lay, cops reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. Her story on the seven deaths in 2 months in Nevada State prisons is in the Las Vegas Sun today. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to 91.5 KUNV. This is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tobin LePan, and now joining us in the studio is Sun real estate reporter Eli Siegel. Thanks for joining us, Eli.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, I'm sort of the end of the year, and then we've been, I guess, crawling our back from the doldrums of the recession in terms of the real estate market. And give us a general idea, you know, how have things gone this year? Where is housing and just the market in general?
Yeah, things have picked up speed a lot this year. You know, sales prices are going up. They're about 30 to 35% higher than they were a year ago. For previously owned homes and for new homes too. New homes are rising at about the same price. Builders are pulling a lot more permits than they were last year. Land prices in certain parts of the valley doubled just in the first 6 months of this year, because they were, people were selling to home builders and whatnot. There's a lot of demand. So things are picking up a lot to the point that some people have been concerned that another bubble is forming because it's such what they see as such an unsustainable growth rate. You know, normally home values and home prices rise in a normal year just 2 to 5%. And to see prices going up 30 to 35% is just way above normal. And Vegas has been leading the country right now in the rate of growth. Now, keep in mind also that Vegas fell a really long way. You know, I think home prices here for second, for used homes peaked in, 05, 06, something like that, at $300,000, $350,000. And then they hit bottom almost 2 years ago at like 118. And now they're hovering right around 180, 185. So that, to a lot of people, is a more normal market. Vegas, the prices in the boom era got so overblown and were so inflated, and they just got ridiculous, basically. And then it just, the whole thing exploded, and now it's recovering. But it's recovering at such a fast rate, in large part, not entirely, but in large part because investors, backed by Wall Street funds, big billion-dollar Wall Street funds, have been buying literally just as many homes as they can. They tell brokers, buy me as many homes as possible. They don't care what they are, as long as they're under a certain price, basically. Then it makes sense for them, and they'll fix them up a little bit, and then they'll rent them out and collect rent payments for 3-4 years. And then I think the idea is that once the market really starts to recover a lot, then they'll sell them. Mm-hmm. And prices have gone up so much though this year, and it has surprised so many people at the rate of growth that a lot of investors have actually started to slow down, and they're not buying as many homes as they used to.
And I feel like there's some debate about whether they're not, there's this maybe hidden pool of, I guess, maybe foreclosed bank-owned homes, maybe, and that at some point there would be this, this wave of previously not-on-the-market homes unleashed on the Las Vegas market. But I feel like I've heard some debate on whether or not that's true, if there really is this hidden pool. I mean, what have you found?
Yeah, there's a lot of debate about this, and people call it the shadow inventory, of homes that are. And it's tough to, at least from what I've found, there are a couple definitions of what that actually means. But to my understanding, what it generally means is that these are homes that either the homeowner has, they're not paying, people have stopped paying their mortgage and they're living for free because of foreclosure processing delays, because banks in Nevada now have to, they're required under state law to file a lot more paperwork before they're allowed to foreclose on homes, because when the recession started, thousands of people literally were losing their homes each month, and it just got way out of control, and people were losing homes who shouldn't have, and banks were just cramming these foreclosures through the system. And so some new laws were written, put in place to slow that down, and it did. And so one of the side effects, though, is that you've got a lot of people who are delinquent on their loans, they're not paying their mortgage, and they're essentially living for free. And so these should be homes, in theory, that banks are foreclosing on and then putting on the market to sell, which would put a lot more inventory and then lower the price down because it would increase the supply. So it's tough to say exactly how many homes like that are out there that should be foreclosed upon and up for sale. I've heard estimates that it's 50,000 just in the valley, but there's really no way to know. It's almost impossible.
And so, in terms of the new development, so are we building a lot more new homes in the valley, in relation to what we were before, and or are we moving a lot of what's sort of on the market?
Home construction has picked up a lot. It's not close to what it was during the boom era when things were just going crazy, but it has picked up a lot. I think, the new home construction market peaked, and this is all according to Dennis Smith. He's a local housing analyst and researcher. He runs Home Builders Research, and he puts out monthly reports on this. And what he's found is that during, I think it was 05 or 06, the local market peaked with 39,000 new homes sold in the valley just in 1 year. And I think this year it's up to about 7,000. Okay. Last year it was like maybe 3,000 or 4,000. So things have picked up a lot, but they're coming from a very, very low level, because the home construction market essentially ground to a halt. And it was literally reduced to almost nothing for a while. And now it's starting to pick up. And so you're seeing a lot more activity, a lot more sticks in the air, as builders say. Mm-hmm.
And what about projects that, say, during the recession were mothballed and then, you know, people maybe waited where the investors didn't have the money to continue with them? Are there projects now that are being bought up and you know, construction started anew?
Yeah, absolutely. There have been a handful of projects that have been bought over the last year or at least earmarked for completion over the last year that had been abandoned essentially during the recession. Once the building boom came to a crash and once everything came to a halt, a lot of mostly major commercial projects like condo towers or apartment buildings or, you know, strip resorts, builders just stopped. You know, the banks pulled their loans. Builders couldn't get any more money, and they either just stop building and still own the land, but they're not doing anything, or they defaulted on their loans and they lost to foreclosure and a bank took possession of it. And so, but what you've seen over the last year is that now that the economy has started to turn around, it's still not great in Las Vegas. I think anyone could tell you that, but it is starting to pick up a bit. And with that, they're just absolute fire sales right now for distressed real estate, as they call it, stuff that's bank owned, foreclosed upon, sitting fallow, whatever. People are just desperate to sell, or they have been desperate to sell, and they're selling for pennies on the dollar. So, you know, Manhattan West was a big project over on the west side of the valley over at Russell Road in the 215 Beltway. It was supposed to be, you know, it was like a 20-acre project, mixed use with office, retail, residential, whatever, big stylish project. The whole thing was a disaster. It was, you know, I think it was supposed to be a $300 million project. And it's been sitting empty for about, I don't know, 4 years, something like that. And then earlier this year, some investors out of California and guys in Vegas teamed up and bought the whole thing. Now, keep in mind, it was supposed to be a $300 million project, and it was, I'm not sure how much of it was built, but a good percentage of it was actually built out. These guys bought it for $20 million.
Yeah, sounds like a deal.
That's a huge deal, yeah. And so now, you know, I haven't seen construction resume, but I know they put new signs up and they've rebranded it. They're now calling it the Gramercy and so forth. But another big project that a lot of people know about is Shops at Summerlin. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be a, you know, 1.2 million something square foot retail center over by the Red Rock Resort in Summerlin on the west side. And in October of 2008, when the economy was just crashing, the owner at the time, General Growth Properties, they just quit and they stopped and they left and they abandoned the whole thing. It was a steel skeleton for years. And then in September, the Howard Hughes Corporation, which was a spinoff from General Growth, they announced that the project was back on track. And now they've spent, I think, upwards of $50 to $70 million so far in construction. And if you go past there, it looks completely different because they've been doing a lot of construction over there. And it looks like it's finally coming together. And then some other projects, too. There's a timeshare tower just west of I-15 off the strip right near the Rio. That was also abandoned, was sold earlier this year. And it looks like if you drive past it, it's almost completed construction-wise, at least the shell, the outside of it, but they've really made a lot of progress on the construction over there. And then some projects on the strip, like the Echelon, you know, another famous building bust that was picked up earlier this year by a company out of Malaysia. They're going to turn it into Resorts World, a Chinese themed mega resort. But there are still projects out there that have not been bought and are still sitting with a big question mark over it. You know, what's going to happen to it? And most notably, the Fontainebleau, and which is right across the street, literally from the Echelon Resort. And that, nothing's happening over there. And that's, who knows what's going to happen.
Right, there's been a lot of speculation about that.
Tons.
Part, right, whether they would strip it for scrap, right, or actually develop it, the weird blue shiny shell at the top of the strip.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk, but nothing's really happening.
And you spoke a little bit about retail space, and I mean, have the prices for retail space and real estate, have they gone back up? Have you seen, you know, sort of the same type of, you know, inching back, you know, in the positive direction as you have with housing and that type of thing?
For commercial property, it's a good question. For commercial property, the rents are going up incrementally. You don't see them going up. They are going up, but literally it's you can really only measure it in inches. And the vacancy rate is still pretty high in general for a lot of commercial property in Vegas. You know, the office market is by far the worst. I mean, their vacancy rate for the office buildings it's been above 20% for about 4 years now. And at one point last fall, according to CBRE, which is a national commercial brokerage firm, Vegas had the highest office vacancy rate in the country. Jeez. It was like 25-26%. And so the numbers vary depending on who's doing the research, but in general, they're all in the 23-25% range, which is extraordinarily high. Rents are really low. It's really tough for office landlords to get tenants, and especially tenants who need a lot of space. So what you see, at least with office buildings, is what brokers call a flight to quality, which is really just tenants that are maybe in one part of town and then they've got 2,000 square feet. The market is so bad right now, they can take 5,000 square feet in a nicer building at a cheaper rate. And so they're moving and they're just taking cheaper space at a nicer building. So you see a lot of musical chairs going on with office space right now. You see some new tenants moving into town, but very little. And then as far as retail goes, that's doing much better overall. than the office market. The vacancy rate for retail right now is around 9%, 10%, something like that. And what's doing particularly well with retail right now is anything on the strip pretty much is a golden ticket. Pretty, it's just the rents are huge. You have no short. There are almost no vacancies. I mean, it's a great location to be. But then when you get into the residential areas, you've got what people call these power centers. These major, humongous 500,000 square foot, 800,000 square foot shopping centers that are anchored by like a Walmart or a Sam's Club or Target or a major big box 100,000, 200,000 square foot retailer, not just a grocery store. Those centers are doing very well right now. They've got very little vacancy. The rents are much higher than other centers. But as you move further into the inner core of Vegas, you get a lot of really low-end, run-down strip centers that are much smaller. They've got they've got very few nationally known tenants, which is what landlords want. And for better or worse, you can criticize, McDonald's as much as you want, but they're a steady tenant and they pay their rent every month. So, so landlords like them. And when you move into the inner core, when you get into those strip centers, physically, they're not like falling apart, but they're notably in worse shape, and they're not as in good condition as the stuff on the outer rings. And they don't have really well-known tenants. They've got more turnover. So it's just that those are doing a lot worse. So you've got kind of this two worlds of Vegas retail going on. It's kind of interesting to see. So.
Right. And getting back to residential developments, you recently wrote a story for Vegas Inc. about this 2,200-acre project, the Cadence Project, between Boulder Highway, Lake Mead Parkway. So that's in Henderson, right?
Yep.
And so I understand this was delayed for years, right? So what is some land that was contaminated with previous industrial waste holding or something like that? What's the story behind this property?
Yeah, Cadence is an interesting property. It's over on, like you said, Boulder Highway. It's between Boulder Highway and Lake Mead Parkway in Henderson, just north of downtown Henderson. And for years, and that's right across the street from the Black Mountain Industrial Center, which is where a lot of chemical plants had been. Because, Henderson was a chemical town. It was
right,
a factory.
The World War II, right? The war effort, they had, was it mercury?
Magnesium.
Magnesium.
Yep. It was, they were essentially helping to build missiles and building weapons and stuff like that. And then eventually when the war ended, that plant got shut down. And then in the early 50s, it was restarted. And you had a lot of chemical makers come to town. And a lot of people have described Henderson as an old, dirty factory town. And frankly, it's because of this area, near this master plan community site. And things have improved a lot since the 70s or 80s. It's a lot cleaner, I think. But that's how people who have been in town for a while describe Henderson. And so this Cadence site is across the street from a lot of major, huge manufacturing plants. I mean, big smokestacks. I mean, these things are the real deal. And the Cadence site was used literally for decades as a dumping ground and as a legal, authorized, approved dumping ground for manufacturers and for government agencies to dump their waste. And they had unlined evaporation ponds, which were also legal at the time, but those were discontinued. They shut those down in the mid-70s, but it was still used as a dumping ground till as recently as 2005 by one of the companies over there called TIMET. It's a titanium manufacturer, and they were dumping their waste into lined evaporation ponds until 2005. And then that's pretty much, I think, when it stopped being used as an industrial waste dump. And the owners of the property, at the time it was Basic Management Incorporated, which is a company that has a big history in Henderson. They and the manufacturers across the street decided to clean the property in the early 90s. And so they started working with state regulators, and they started doing a lot of work to clean the place. And then they've spent more than $120 million total on testing, analysis, and physical cleanup and restoration work. And the site is now owned by a company called Landwell, which is just an affiliate of Basic Management. And their spokesman told me that the site is, all the cleanup has pretty much been all done except for some areas, some fringe areas on the property. But all the sites, all the areas now slated for development are cleaned. And that's what the story was about, how this Cadence site is now, or has been, on the drawing board as a master plan, as a 2,200-acre master plan community, similar to a Green Valley or an Aliante or Summerlin or whatever, since 2004. Is when Landwell originally announced plans that they were going to sell the entire site. And this was, 3-4 years before the main physical cleanup even began. They had announced that they were going to sell the entire site to a company out of Texas called Centex Homes. But once the market started taking a downturn, Centex pulled out, and they didn't end up buying the land. They backed out of the deal. And then the next year, what's called Landwell, their executives reportedly were in talks to sell just a small chunk, 42 acres of the property, to Boyd Gaming to build a new casino. But then apparently that fell through because Boyd never bought the land, and of course no casino was built. If you go out there right now, it's just a huge stretch of dirt. Mm. And there's literally nothing out there. They've been doing some grading work, but nothing has been built. And so just recently, just a few weeks ago, Landwell finally sold land over at the Cadence site to a home builder. They sold at least 200 acres to Lennar, which is a major national builder out of Miami. And then they've also filed plans with the city of Henderson to build almost 120 homes to have Woodside Homes, which is a private builder out of Utah, to have them build almost 120 houses on 18 acres of land that Landwell still owns. So they're not selling it to Woodside like they are to Lennar. So it's finally, after 9 years, after they originally announced plans, this thing could finally actually see some construction.
Mm-hmm. Is there going to be demand for all these? I mean, in terms of the new home construction, if there is the shadow pool and we keep building new homes sort of around the edges of the valley, is there any concern that we're sort of jumping the gun again and that there isn't going to be the demand to actually get people to buy these homes, and actual families and not just investors?
Yeah, I think there is concern out there that builders are adding inventory when they really don't have to be and there isn't the demand for it. But at the same time, they are selling new homes. I mean, new homes are actually being sold. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that, there is this, potential shadow inventory out here where there are a lot of homes that could be up for sale but aren't. And so it's restricting the availability and supply of homes for sale in the valley. And so it can be very tough right now for people to find an affordable used house for sale. I think there are only about 2,000-3,000 used homes a month being sold. And in a place like Vegas, which the metro area is about 2 million people, I mean that's really not a lot. And you still have a lot of turnover here, people moving in and out. And so there is, even aside from the investors, there is still just kind of a local natural demand for housing. It's not as big as it used to be, but the inventory is really, it is pretty restricted. And so, I think you can look at it both ways that, should they really be building new homes? Is there demand? It's tough to say, but obviously they think there is. So.
It sounds like now might be a hard time. I'm not in the market to buy a house, but it sounds like if I were, single family looking to buy a house, not investing, it seems like it's a difficult time to decide if now is a good time, right? In terms of if we're sitting on a new bubble, if prices have really dropped and it will only go up from here. Yeah. It sounds like some analysts do believe that there could be another fall in prices, right?
Yeah, people have been saying that prices will fall. They've been saying that actually for several months now, that prices will start to fall, but they really haven't. And so it's tough to say because prices are still going up, 2-3% each month. Although last month there was a slight dip, it was like 1%. And a couple months before that, it was a 1% dip. And so you're starting to see tiny cracks. Not big ones, because a 1% drop is statistically almost not even it's not even a big deal. But you're starting to see some cracks in the armor, of these fast growing prices. And so yeah, if you're a local resident, you've got family, and you want to buy your first house, it's tough right now, especially because Vegas in general, you don't have very high wages here. It's not. Overall, salaries here are lower on average than other cities, probably because of the resort industry. And so you don't have people making a ton of money, and homes are going up very fast in price. And it's pretty tough to get a mortgage loan right now because a lot of people here, especially here in Vegas, went through foreclosures or bankruptcies or whatever. It was such a, it was ground zero for financial disaster out here. And so you got a lot of people who can't qualify for a mortgage, and that's the only way they would be able to afford one of these houses. There's no way they can pay cash. And so it can be tough. Now there are people buying, that's for sure. But I think in general it can be pretty tough.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see how the market goes in 2014 as we go forward. Well, we've been speaking with Eli Siegel, the real estate reporter for the Las Vegas Sun and Vegas Inc. Thanks for joining us, Eli.
Thank you.
You've been listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tobin Lepan. Our producer is Richard Riegel. Catch you next week.